my favorite. Okay,
so we are holding on Gimel Omid Beis, six lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah yet another one of the differences between Dinei Mominus and Dinei Nefashis. Was we said Dinei Mominus HaKol Kol, we said Dinei Mominus, anybody can speak up on either side of the case, whether the Schus or the Choyva, but Dinei Nefashis not. Dinei Nefashis only, Dinei Nefashis, well, not the Dayanim themselves can do L'Choyva, of course, but not anybody can be Malamed Choyva. So the question is, Gemara asks, HaKol V'Apir La'edim. On the face of it, the word HaKol means even the Edim. Even let's say, for example, so Edim themselves come to Beis Din and they testify that Reuven, let's say, broke Shabbos or whatever. And on that basis, Beis Din is going to discuss whether to convict him or not. It sounds like the Mishnah is saying the Edim themselves can speak up and say, we have arguments, actually, even though it's true, we saw him breaking Shabbos and we warned him, et cetera, but we have arguments that we can use to exonerate, that you might want to listen to exonerate him. So the question is, name him a because on the face of it, HaKol means everybody. It means anybody who's present. So in that case, name a Masnissin Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yehuda V'lai Rabbanan. If you're going to say that, then would that mean that the Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yehuda and not according to the Rabbanan? The Tanya, namely, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, the aid echad layana b'nefesh, the Pasuk says that one aid should not speak up against a person, besides for the simple meaning that it means that one aid can't testify to convict a person. We know that from other places in the Torah, including this week's Parasha, it says you need two aidim. But you also learn from it that it says, lo yana b'nefesh, it means he should not speak up against a person, about a person, implying, bein l'schus, bein l'choyva. The aid is not allowed to speak up, whether the schus or the choyva. The aid gives his aid, or the aidim, rather, whatever, give their aiders, and then that's it. Then they're out of the picture. They're not, it's not their business to start mentioning arguments in his favor or arguments against him.
That they can,
l'schus. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, from the Lashon HaKol. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, I'm only the schus, vein, only the choyva. Whereas Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says that no, all it means is the aidim cannot speak up against him. Once they said they're aiders, they can't argue further arguments against him, but they can argue the schus. So it sounds like if our Mishnah is saying HaKol, that anybody in Dinei Nefashis can argue this course, if it sounds like even the Edim in that case, then that would go only according to Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is no. Amar Papa, Be'echad Min Talmidim B'Divrei HaKol. No, because the HaKol of our Mishnah doesn't mean the Edim necessarily. It, according to Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yehuda, fine, it can mean. But according to the Chachamim, and which is after all the Halacha, the HaKol over here would be any of the Talmidim. We learned previously in the first, at the end of the first paragraph, that each Beis Din of 23 or the Sanhedrin Gdolah for that matter had three rows of Talmidim sitting in front of them. So any of those Talmidim are able to speak up l'schus. The Divrei HaKol, in which case that goes according to everybody. So the Talmidim are able to speak up l'schus if they see a reason based on the discussion that they hear going on among the Dayanim. They can see a reason to exonerate him. Imagine, for example, what's the
Talmidim exonerate? They're not Dayanim.
They're not Dayanim, but imagine, for example, like this. We know that one of the factors you need in order to be able to convict a person is there needs to be Hasra, and the action has to be done to the Divrei of Hasra. We'll learn in the next paragraph the details about that. Imagine, for example, let's say all the Dayanim on the Beis Din forgot about this point. They were under the impression that it doesn't matter how long the Hasra was before the Maisa, as long as there was Hasra. So they're going to convict him. One of the Talmidim, though, remembers that, hey, wait a minute, you know what, there's a din that Hasra has to be tested of the Maisa.
Well,
in this case,
suggesting to the Dayanim.
That's the point. But if it was the other way around, if let's say, for example, if it was the other way around, if the Dayanim are finding reasons to exonerate the guy, and one of the Talmidim wants to argue that that's not a valid reason, or I can see based on a certain drasha or whatever that it shouldn't be so, then he doesn't have the right to speak up.
The Talmud.
Okay, some of the Rishonim learn of it. Yonah talks about that maybe fine if he speaks up. I mean the Beis Din isn't going to tell him to be quiet.
No.
Rather, what it would mean is when we say that he can speak up or he can't speak up, if we say he can speak up, it means temporarily he becomes one of the Dayanim. Temporarily, we add him. We'll learn actually in the next paragraph about that. That if one of the Talmidim comes up with a reason to exonerate the guy, then we elevate him, we put him up on the platform or whatever, together with the other Dayanim over there, and he joins the Beis Din. We're talking to Dinei Nefashis.
So how do you say we have
So not always. You have 23 is the minimum. If you have a Talmud like that who comes up with a valid reason, then they add him temporarily to the Beis Din. And in fact, they will learn the next paragraph that if Yesh Mamash B'dvarav, that what he's saying makes sense, then they keep him as a permanent member. Yes.
This is not a grade schooler.
This is one of the Talmudim of one of the great Batidinim. Yeah. Doesn't matter, but now he becomes a Dayan on that basis. Okay. My time at Rabbi Yosef before.
You don't like it.
Yeah, he has to be a Talmud who knows this stuff. Obviously, we're not just talking. Yeah, we're not just talking a fifth grader who comes for a visit to, you know, take your kid to base today. Okay, it's not scary. Abu Dhabi is doing it with foot. He's doing it for to exonerate the guy. Okay. The question is, my time at Rabbi Yosef
before. Scary for the other people that can get murdered.
Yeah. Okay. Come on. My time at Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. What is Rabbi Yosef's reasoning that he says that an aide effectively can act almost like one of the dayanim over here and be able to argue in favor of the guy? The reason is the Omakra, because he says, because the Pasuk says, aid echad lo yanav nefesh lo mus. He says, it says an aide cannot speak up about a person to die, implying lo mus hu de'ena oina. He can't speak up to cause the guy to be put to death, avalus chus oina, but he can speak up to find reason to exonerate the guy. The Rabbanon, what would the Rabbanon answer to that? They would say, Omer Shlokish Mishum Demechti Kinegea Beidusin. The Rabbanon say, yes, but the problem with that is, if you allow the aide to speak up Luschus, he's kind of Negea Beidusin. What does it mean? Rashi explains like this. Imagine the aide has testified against, Aidim rather, have testified against this person. They say he was Machal Shabbos or murdered or what have you, and it's Chayav Mitzvah. Now imagine the aide starts rethinking. You know what? Maybe I'm wrong after all. Maybe I shouldn't be. Maybe I shouldn't have come to Beis Din. Maybe I didn't see what I really. Okay. Maybe so. The problem is that there's a din called Kivin Shehigat Shuvein Chozer Magid. Once an aide has said his testimony, he can't retract it. So what might he do in order to get around it? He might think, therefore, you know what? Okay, I can't retract my aiders. Beis Din won't listen to me. But if I come up with a reason to exonerate the guy, then I'll accomplish, I'll ease my conscience where I was going to send an innocent person to be killed. But, and Beis Din will have to listen to me. Therefore, the Rabbanan say you can't do that. He's negated the aiders.
If he's
you can't
an aide.
That's what we're talking about, if he's an aide.
But if he's a student.
No, we're talking about one of the aides. That's why everybody agrees one of the students can speak up. We're talking about one of the aides. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda has said that one of the aidim can speak up, that Rabbanan say no because he's like Negev Aedus. The Meiri learns a little differently. He says the Negev Aedus is the aide might be afraid, what if the relatives of this guy come after me? That they're going to be mad at me that I railroaded their relative. Therefore, I better find some way of exonerating him. And
on the other hand, you could say the aides is incomplete without this additional detail.
No, but it's not, because that's not part of his aedus. That's an argument that he's...
Because
not part of his aedus is, what did you actually see? When did you see? What was he wearing? It's not. It's his own opinion. There's a difference between...
It's an opinion.
As far as I know, based on what I learned from my Rebbe, let's say, for example, the din is that such and such. We don't want to hear dinim from you, aide. We want to hear testimony from you. Okay. So therefore, so that's it. Yeah, thanks.
But if he comes with a new fact that he has learned,
well,
if we forgot to mention.
Okay, I mean, there's Kivin Shehigat Shuvein Chozer Magid. He can't modify his testimony.
It's not about modification, but if he forgot a detail.
If he forgot a detail, then okay, he forgot a detail, and that's it. Okay. All right.
It's an opinion.
Yeah.
Okay. I forgot a detail. It wasn't really a nice thing.
Fine. New, come on. But Rabbanan hai lamus my dashi. They find what do the Rabbanan do with the word lamus if they're saying that an aide can't speak up with chutz or lechoiva on the guy? The answer is mukmi like the echad min tamidim. They say the word lamus is not talking about one of the aidim speaking up because the aid can't speak up. L'schus ulachayva. They say that it's referring to one of the tamidim. Kibitani, as we learn in a brisa, omer echad min aidim yeshlu lamud l'schus. How do we know that if one of the aidim says I have an argument in favor of the guy, minayin shein shemin? Like, how do we know that Beis Din doesn't listen to him? Tamavlima aid echad layana. Therefore, the pasuk says an aid should not speak up. Meaning, don't speak up, period. You say the facts that you saw, and that's it. Then we don't want to hear from you anymore. How do we know, on the other hand, if one of the Talmidim, sitting in front of the Beis Din, speaks up and says, I have an argument against the guy, I have an argument to convict him. How do we know we don't listen to him? We take the word echad and split it off from aid. We say aid means the aiders in general, because as we learned before, aid in the Torah means two aidim. Echad, one, lo yana b'nefesh lamus, should not speak up against the person to have him killed, the one meaning one of the Talmidim. So one of the Talmidim, so we don't listen to one of the Talmidim.
Do we know it's the Talmidim?
Because it has to be. It can't be the Eidim, because we said the Eidim on a Gevet over. And it can't be the Dayanim, because obviously the Dayanim have the right to speak one way or the other. That has to be the Talmidim. Then we said dinin nefashos hamalamed chula. We said another distinction between dinin mamonos and dinin nefashos is that when it comes to dinin mamonos, the dayanim can change their mind anytime they want. An individual dayan who was really thinking that Reuven is chayev can now change his mind and decide that Reuven is potter from paying. As opposed to dinin nefashos, we said once one of the dayanim has decided that he has an argument to exonerate this guy, he can't now change his mind and start arguing against it. However, Amar Rav, Loishonu El Bashat Maso Matan. Rav says, though, this only applies during the discussion that the Beis Din is doing. Al Bashat Dumar Din, but when it comes to the actual verdict, then, as a matter of fact, yes, even if one of the Dayanim all this time was arguing for acquittal, when it comes to the actual vote, do we convict, do we not convict, he can change his mind and vote to convict.
During the argument, he can convict. Although he's argued...
Even though previously he argued for the guy's innocence, so during the rest of the argument, we're not going to listen to any argument that he brings up to convict the guy.
But
when it comes to the voting, if he wants to vote in favor of conviction, fine, he can vote
in
favor of
conviction. And in reverse, is it true? If he argued for guilt, now he can...
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, then he can do whatever he wants. He can argue for innocence, and he can vote for innocence.
You can vote differently from what he argued.
Yeah. Okay, the Gemara says, maybe. I have a contradiction in the next paragraph to this din of Rav. We learn in the next parak in the Mishnah, Lamacharis Mashkimin Uboyin, that we learned the other day, one of the other distinctions between Dinin Nefashos and Dinin Mamonos is Dinin Nefashos, you can't have the trial and the verdict on the same day. You have to have the verdict pushed off to the next day to give the Dayanim time to sleep on it. So the Mishnah says, Lamacharis Mashkimin Uboyin, the next day they wake up early and they reconvene. Each person who was voting for, who was saying that they, that who was arguing that the guy is innocent, that the guy that they should acquit him, argues. He says, "Ani hamazake, I am Pliny who said that we should exonerate him. Umazake ani b'mkoymi, and I maintain my position that we should exonerate him. Hamachayev Omer, each one who said that he b'mkoymi in my place, meaning I stay in my place, meaning I still hold, I haven't changed my mind." Any of the Dayanim who said that he's going to be guilty, that he's going to be convicted, says, "Ani Amachayev, I feel that he should be convicted." Or Machayev Ani B'Mekoyimi, and I still am sticking to my opinion that he should be convicted. And the Mishnah continues, "Hamalamed Chayev, Malamed Zchus." Anybody who up until now had been arguing for conviction can now argue for acquittal. But anybody who was arguing for acquittal can't now change his mind and vote for conviction. Now the question is, who isn't the next day, presumably that's when the Gemara Din takes place. According to Rav, it should be, even though yesterday I argued for acquittal, today Rav is saying I'm able to vote for a conviction. According to this Mishnah, it seems that not. It seems that each of the Mizakim has to stick to their opinion. Rav is saying it's not the voting. Fine, but that's we assume that the next day is the Gemara Din. We assume that. Why are they reconvening the next day? The pashtus, because they're the only, they finish. They, this is the voting. Mistama, they did the whole discussion the day before. Now they're ready for the vote. And
So it contradicts what Rav said.
Okay, the Gemara says, "Relita Meich, new according to your own Svara, Lamachros Maso Matan Mileka." What do you think? It can't be that the next day there can be Maso Matan. It can happen that it's a complicated case, and you have there needs to be more than one day of deliberation. They stopped and then left elsewhere. It talks about that the Sanhedrin used to sit, I think, until they brought the Talmud Chovin Habayim, I think. So on an average day, that would be like 3:34 in the afternoon or so, and because that's to be done during the day, and then they go home, and then if they haven't finished deliberating, it's a complicated case, and they still we'll see soon. The Dayanim themselves didn't take notes. The Sofrei Dayanim, the court reporters took notes. Yeah. Anyway. So, Kikatani Bashat Maso Matan. The Mishnah can be talking about over there if they need to continue deliberating the next day. Then we'll say, even Rav would agree that somebody who yesterday said Luzchus can't change his mind now and say Lechoiva during the deliberation. But eventually, when it comes, after however many days of deliberations, when they finally come to a vote, yes, he can.
Rav was saying that the same day they cannot.
Rav was saying that you're able to change your mind when it comes to the voting. That Mishnah is not a contradiction, because that Mishnah can be talking about where the deliberation needs to continue into the next day. Not that you finished all the deliberations on Sunday and now Monday morning you're getting together to vote. You stopped the deliberations on Sunday because it's time to go home, and now on Monday you're continuing because you still haven't figured out not everybody has come to a conclusion yet what they want to say.
What I'm not clear about is Rob was saying you cannot change your opinion
during the deliberations, but you can change your mind when it comes to the vote. That Mishnah does not contradict that, because that Mishnah can be talking about all during the deliberation.
Right.
Not necessarily, no, because even if it's still they need to do more deliberations, still they need to get it done as fast as possible. You can't do any idea, and you can't make the poor accused guy wait around while they get their act together. They got to do it as fast as possible.
Yeah, but on the other hand, it's a very serious decision.
Okay, that's why we need to wait for the next day. But the point is, they're not gonna wake up and yawn and have their morning coffee and sleep away half the day and whatever and then get around to the mashkimin. They still have to come as early as possible and get going. Okay. Fine.
So it's not a contradiction.
Toshma, let's bring another proof. That same Mishnah continues. Don in Elu k'neged Elu. You can have a situation like this. We learned back in the first parak, and we learned in our parak as well, that to convict in Dinei Nefashos, you need a majority of two or more. So what if, let's say, for example, we're talking the Beis Din of 71. Imagine, or even the Beis Din of 23, but they had to keep on adding Dayanim because they were deadlocked. What happens, you come to the end, they have 71 Dayanim there, and 36 of them are voting to convict the guy, and 35 are voting to acquit. Well, it's not a majority of two. So that's no good. You can't convict him on that basis. On the other hand, you're deadlocked over here. It would be a bazillion for the Beis Din to just go and dismiss him at that point that the fact is there was a majority against him. So therefore, the Mishnah says, Don in Elu Kineged. Yeah, so therefore, what the Mishnah says is, Don in Elu Kineged Elu. What they do is the Dayanim start arguing one group against the other. Each one starts bringing their proofs from the drushas of Psukim or whatever the dinim or whatever ad shigira echad min amechayvin dira mezakin, until we get to the point where one of the mechayvin, one of the 36 who voted to acquit to convict, sees, you know what, you're right, you have a good point, you mezakin, I change my mind and I agree with you. And that's the question. The im isa, if you're going to tell me, Rab, that when it comes to the voting, you're able to change your mind in either direction, listening nami ipcha, why shouldn't the Mishnah mention the other way around? You could have just as well that one of the 35 mezakin decides, you know what, you're right, he's taking not zakai, I'm wrong in thinking you should be zakai. Let's say he's chayev, and now we have 37 to 34. Yeah, that's the Mishnah didn't mention it.
Right.
The answer is that's not a proof because tana aschus kamahader, achayev alo kamahader. Because you could argue the Mishnah wants to look for the situation where you're going to exonerate the guy. Lishna Malyarash, he says that the Mishnah would rather look at the positive possibility where the guy ends up going free because they end up. It doesn't exclude the other way around. It could end up. The point is, you can't end up with a deadlock 36 to 35 because then what are you going to do? So therefore, it has to end up that either you're going to have a majority to acquit 37 to 34 or a majority to convict 37 to 34. It's true. It could happen either way, but the Mishnah would prefer to tell us about the good. Yeah. Hey, so you can't add any more than 71, right? Okay. Tashma. How about let's prove from something that Rabbi Yosef Chanina says? What if we just said before at the top of the Amud that one of the Talmidim who's sitting in front of the Beis Din is entitled to speak up and give an argument in favor of the guy? Now, what happens if he gives an argument and then he dies? We still consider him when it comes to counting the votes. We still consider as if he was still alive and standing in his place. Now the question is, am I? If you, Rab, are telling us that you're able to change your mind at a later point and eventually vote for conviction, even though all this time you were voting for you were arguing. No, but we should argue. Neima ilu hayakayim hadarbei. Why shouldn't we argue? Look, if he was still alive, he would have had the right when it comes to voting to decide to vote for conviction.
We're saying he
who was arguing for acquittal all this time. Right. Now when it comes to the Gemara Din, we're saying, Rav is saying he's allowed to vote for conviction. Well then, why should we automatically assume just because he was arguing for acquittal that therefore he would have voted for acquittal as well and count him as a vote for acquittal? He might have changed his mind and then voted for conviction. The answer is okay, but hashtamiyah lehadavei. Okay, but the fact of the matter is, as he didn't change his mind. He didn't change his mind. Therefore, we should assume. Therefore, we should assume that he would have voted as he argued. Most of the time, you vote. Most of the time, you vote as you argue. So therefore, you can nothing prove otherwise. But the point is that we could. He didn't actually vote, but we consider that he would have voted. The question is,
what happens if you bring someone else now?
Who's the someone else? What do you mean?
I mean, if it's not 73, there's how many?
So you had 71 to begin with, and now you have another Talmidim. You would have temporarily had 72, but now that he passed away, you still count him as a vote for acquittal.
You don't replace him.
Well, he's a Talmud. He wasn't originally a member of the Beis Din anyway. So the Beis Din is now back to 71. But when it comes to counting the votes, you now count 72 votes, and you count him as one of the votes for acquittal. Yeah. Okay. The question is, v'hashocho mitam.
So it's saying someone who passed away can still vote.
Yeah. Okay. V'hashocho mitam. But what about this that we said that we know they sent a message from Eretz Yisrael, which, as we learned at the end of the first parak, means that Rabbi Lozer sent this message. According to Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina, it comes out what he's saying excludes what Rabbeinu, meaning Rab, said. In other words, Rabbi Lozer was saying very explicitly that what Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina is saying is against what Rab is saying. So how are you trying to find for what Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina is saying about this Echam and Tamidim that you can make it work according to Rab? It seems that it's in contradiction. No, Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina is one of the Amoraim, but if he's one of the Tanoim, then it's even worse because then Rab has a Tana against him. But the point is, you're trying to end for Rabbi Yosef Chanina's opinion and make it work with Rav, but we see that Shocho Mitam, that the Rabbi Yosef Chanina, is against what Rav says.
We see from where?
From this, that they Shocho Mitam, the Divir Rabbi Yosef Chanina, Mutsa Mikal Rabbeinu. What Rabbi Yosef Chanina is saying is excluding what Rabbeinu said, Rabbeinu meaning Rav. The answer is Ein Mutsa Hitmar. No, you have the wording of the message wrong. He didn't say Mutsa Mikal Rabbeinu. He said Ein Mutsa. It's not excluding what Rav said. In other words, it does work together. Rabbi Yosef Chanina is saying what happens if one of the Talmidim dies. That works. That still can work with what Rav is saying, because even though it's true, according to Rav, had this Talmid been alive, he could have changed his mind and voted for conviction. But since he died before that, then we count him as a vote for acquittal. We upheld his deliberation, right, as if it was a vote, right? So that it can still make, it can still work together. Still no contradiction against Rav. One of the Mephoshim says that maybe, I mean, it's hard to say that they left out the word Ain. He says maybe what it is is you could say it was said as a statement or it was said as a rhetorical question. Mutsa miklau rabbeinu. First we thought that it was a statement. Mutsa miklau rabbeinu. It's flatly against what Rabbeinu said. Now we're rereading it as if it was a rhetorical question. Mutsa miklau rabbeinu. Can it be that what Rabbi Yosef Chanina is saying is excluding what Rab says? And the answer is no. Tashma, come, we'll bring another proof. The Mishnah says, Shnei Sofra Dayanin Omnim Lasnehem. We said that you have the two court reporters stand in front of them, in front of the Dayanim. Echad min ha-yamin ve-echad min ha-smol. One stands on the right, one stands on the left. Ve-kosven diram ha-zakin ve-diram ha-chayt. And they write down the words, the arguments of those who are arguing for acquittal and those who are arguing for conviction.
Each one writes separately.
So we'll learn in the Mishnah over there, and we'll learn in a couple of days exactly machlokas there in the Mishnah whether they write only the mezakin and the mechay, or is there, or there's another opinion in the Mishnah over there that there are three sofer adayanim and the third one writes both.
So one writes the mezakin.
So according to that, one would write them as one writes the mezakin, one writes the mechayev, and one writes both the mezakin and mechayev. Yeah, I guess you'd have to learn shorthand. Probably they write their names. Pashtos, yeah. So the question is, Bishlema Divra Mechayvin. I can understand why the court reporters have to write down the words of the dayanim who are arguing for conviction. L'mocha chazur time achrena, because after all, the whole point is we want there to be halonas din. We need to hold over the verdict for the next day, like we said before. So we need to know tomorrow. L'mocha chazur time achrena. The next day they may change their mind and find a different reason. and Ubola Mevet Halonas Din. Then we need to hold over the verdict for the next day. So we need to know what they were saying the previous day, what they were arguing for conviction. Because that way they may change their mind and decide that what they were thinking. Yeah, keeping a record. Ella Divrei HaMezakin, but why should you have to write down the words of the ones who are acquitting? If they're able, when it comes to the verdict, if they're able to change their mind anyway, let's assume that today they finished off the whole deliberation, then my timer, why should you have to write down the Divrei HaMezakin? Lav Mishum B'Yichazer Time Akhrin Al-Khayva Lemashkechin Al-Lahu. L'chorda, the reason must be because if they find a reason to convict, they're not able to change their mind. Well, in that case, that contradicts Rav. According to Rav, they are able to vote for conviction after all. So who cares what reasons they were thinking of for exonerating yesterday? When it comes to the voting the next day, they can change their mind.
This could be talking about the deliberation.
No, but the question is, why do we need to write down any reasons that they found for exonerating the guy, for acquitting the guy? Because then when it comes to the vote, they could change their mind.
Not during the deliberation.
Yes. The answer is loy. No, that's not the reason. The reason why you need to write them down, the reason is to make sure that you don't have two of the dayanim giving one reason for acquittal based on two different psukim. Meaning, in other words, what's wrong with that is like this. We find Rav Asi asked Rav Yechon a question. What if two different dayanim each give the same logic for exonerating the guy, but from two different psukim where it comes out the same din? One of them says, based on a certain pasuk, let's say, I learned from this pasuk, let's say, for example, that you need hasra tesrei dibur of the action, and that wasn't over here. And a different one says, I agree with that din, but I hold that we learned it from a different pasuk. What would be the din? Well, the problem with that is, as we're going to see on the next line, no pasuk in the Torah is extra. So you can't have two psukim that are teaching us the exact same din. If two dayanim are learning the exact same din from two different psukim, it means one of them must have misunderstood the pasuk. The pasuk is really meant for some other drasha. Therefore, Amalei, so therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, Ein monim lahen al echad.
Many times psukim can give two types of interpretation.
One second. So Rabbi Yochanan says, in fact, then in that case, we count those two votes as only one. Because one of them must have made a mistake. One of them, the pasuk that one of them is using for his drasha can't be for that drasha, because we already have a different pasuk. We don't know which one. Therefore, we only have one of them as a valid drasha, and the other one is not. It's interesting, by the way, that Rambam uses the expression that if they come, that if they learn them from two, he said that Rambam uses the expression afilu mishnei psukim, if they have one reason, even if it's from two psukim, which leads the Kesef Mishnah to say that the Rambam would understand it to mean that if two dayanim come up with the same reason based on the same positive, all the more so you'd only count them as one vote because they're saying the exact same thing. But not so simple, because the Shah asks on that, so what does that mean? Let's say, for example, it's a murder case. All of the dayanim who are voting to convict say, "Look, it says in the Torah, loisdirsach, and the guy was a ritzeach." Are you going to say all those count as only one vote? Yeah, no. So the shach says that you can't say what the Kesef Mishnah is saying. Obviously, it must be a mistake in the Rambam. The shach says he must have meant, as our Gemara is saying, only if they come from two different psukim, where it means that one of them darshan a pasuk wrongly. If they all come from the same, if a bunch of them come from the same pasuk, like loisdirsach, okay, then there's no question they'll count as different votes. Yeah. Lisa, where do we know this from, that if two dayanim come up with the same idea but based on different psukim, then we don't count it as two? Because they have a pasuk in Tilim that says like this. Achas dibur elikim, the Eibishter spoke one thing. Shtayim zushamati, I heard from it two things. Ki oiz leilikim, because Hashem has power. Meaning, mikra echad yotze l'kamatayim, to answer your question, one pasuk can be used to darshan, to learn out many different things, because we know we learn Torah on many different levels, pshat, remez, drush, soid, within each one you have multiple ways of understanding. The ain't tam echad yotze l'kamatayim akroi. You do not have one reason, one svara, that comes out from multiple psukim, because Marsha explains, the vote is, since the pasuk is stressing, ki oiz leilakim, the Eivishta has power, meaning the Eivishta has the ability to take the same words of one pasuk and have them mean, and embedded in them multiple meanings. But to have two psukim that teach us the exact same thing, even a boss of the dumb doesn't be a gnai for him that he just says extra words without any meaning. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught this idea based on it, ironically, this idea that you can, from a different pasuk, namely, the pasuk says, Uchafati shipoitit sela. The word of the Edishter is like a hammer that shatters a rock. Meaning, Mapatish zem is chalak l'kamim nitzaitit. Just like the hammer breaks the rock or is broken itself, Tosfos talks about the two possibilities, into many pieces. Af mikra echad yotzei l'kama tamim, and so also one pasuk can be divided into many different meanings. Tosfos discusses over here on the face of it, I mean, what does it mean, Uchafatish yipoitit sela? Does it mean the hammer shatters the rock into many fragments? Or does it mean a rock which is so hard that when you bang on it with a hammer, and Tosfos brings from a medrash on Eicha, that the hammer itself shatters into pieces when you hit a hard rock? Whatever the case, the point. Who's your fight? Can mean as Alpidikshu can be either way. It can be as the hammer shatters the rock, or as the hammer which the rock shatters. Your fight Tzela can mean that the rock which the rock shatters. It can. Tosfos mentions based on a medrash in Eicha that expresses this idea that sapphire, for example, is so hard that if you try to break it with a hammer, the hammer will shatter, not the sapphire. Okay. So the question is, Heichi Domi Tam Echa Mishnei Mikra. Give me an example of this idea where you have two different drushas, where you have one drusha that learned from two different psukim, where we're going to say therefore that one of them must be wrong. What's an example? This is like this. Amar of Zid Kibitzna. I'll give you an example based on a Mishnah in Zvachim. So as background, the Torah mentions by various korbanos, the Torah mentions the idea kol hanegeya b'mizbeach yikdash, or kol hashayiga b'hem yikdash. What does that mean? Literally, it means anything that touches the mizbeach becomes holy. What does that mean? It means you can have, for example, a korban which became possible at some point during the procedure of offering it. There was the blood was spilled before it was sprinkled on the mizbeach. Let's say the blood or the meat or whatever became tameh. The kohen had a wrong thought that a machsheves man, which we'll learn about in Zvachim, which makes it piggle. There's a bunch of different possibilities of how a korban can become posel during the process of bringing it. Normally we would say, fine, it's posel. You have to take the korban, you take it outside of this mikdash to the place we burn posel the korbanos, and that's that. And then the guy has to bring another korban. There's a place outside the bris mikdash where they would burn posel the korbanos. However, you have a concept that if such a korban that became posel, as long as it's psul in a kodesh, psul had to happen after it was brought into the azara. Let's not get into those details, but whatever. If by mistake they brought up the pieces of that onto the mizbeach, you leave them there. B'dieved, you let them get burned there. Even though they may be tameh, they may be piggle, they may be whatever, but they were brought up to the mizbeach. B'dieved, that's it. They get put on the fire. That's what it means. Kol hanegeya b'hem yikdash. So now the Mishnah in Zvachim talks about the details of this. Mizbeach mekadosh asaroi lo. The mizbeach makes holy whatever is appropriate for it. In the sense, this concept called im olu lo yodu, if a posel of korban was brought up onto the mizbeach, you don't bring it down, you don't take it off the mizbeach, even though it was tameh or posel or what have you. Yeah. So the guy's not yodu, yeah. Bring another korban, yeah. Rabbi Yeshua, I'm a kol roi le'ishim imol le'yer. Rabbi Yeshua says that it means anything which is suitable to be burnt in the fire. Then Rashi points out, by the way, as a roi loy means, for example, let's say, for example, you have Rashi gives an example. Let's say a korban mincha. We know the first thing that has to be done with it is the kohen sticks his hand into it and scoops out a fistful of it. That's called the kohen. It's the equivalent, the taking out the koimus is the equivalent of shechting an animal carbon. And then you have to put that koimus into another keli to make it koimish. Let's say the koyan forgot.
Is open,
what?
When the animal is open?
No, I'm talking about a koyan mincha.
Oh,
a koyan mincha. So you take the thing, you scoop out a handful of it, then you're supposed to put that handful, the koimus, into another keli to make it koimish. It now becomes official, that's the equivalent in an animal carbon of Kabbalah Saddam, of receiving the blood in a basin, and then you take it to the mizbeach and you burn that koimus on the mizbeach. Let's say you forgot to put the koimet into a keli. That wouldn't be considered roi l'mizbeach. That wouldn't be considered the kind of thing that's kol roi l'mizbeach. That, even if you brought it up to the mizbeach, you would have to take it down. But we're talking about, for example, let's say pigul, the tameh, or what have you.
Yes,
yeah, that you mean. So Rabbi Yeshua, and the kol roi le'ishim, Rabbi Yeshua says the rule is anything which is suitable to be burnt on the fire. Im olal yerud, if it was brought up to the mizbeach, you don't take it down. Shenema, the pasuk says ha'oila al mukta, it says the oila on the pyre, on the fire. Ma oila shiru oila ishim also le'teirud. Just like the point is, the pasuk is drawing a comparison to a korban oila. Just like a korban oila, which is something that's suitable to be burnt on the fire, because the whole oila is burnt on the fire, and therefore im also le'teirud. Therefore, if it's brought up to the Mizbeach, even though it became possible, you don't take it down. Apkosho, Roy La'ishim, the same way. The rule is anything which is originally suitable to be burnt on the fire, im ola la'yerud. If you bring it up, you don't bring it down. That's Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Gamliel, and the kol roi la Mizbeach, im ola la'yerud. Rabbi Gamliel says it differently. Anything that's suitable to be brought on the Mizbeach, if it's brought up, it doesn't go down. And he learns from a different passage. Shenema, he ola la'mot on the Mizbeach. Ma'ola shiru uya b'gavim mizbeachim also l'teirid. So again, just like an ola, which is just like an ola, which is suitable for the mizbeach. If it goes up for the mizbeach, you don't bring it down. Ach kosher roi l'mizbeachim ola l'teirid. The same thing. Anything that's suitable to be brought on the mizbeach, if you bring it up, you don't bring it down. Now the point is the tavayhu marbu psulit, because tavayhu marbu komarbu. Now both of them, what are they coming to explain? What are they saying that the pasuk is adding that even though you shouldn't have brought it up to the mizbeach, but yeah, if you did, you still brought it on the mizbeach. We're talking psulit. Both of them are marbu things that are possible. But they were originally growing.
That's originally.
Yes. And you see, they learn it from two different psukim, two different words in the pasuk rather. Ma ma'iti lomim moikto, ma ma'iti lomim mizbeach. One learns it from the word moikta, the fire, and the other one learns it from the word mizbeach, ala mizbeach. So there is an example. So there is an example. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel are learning the same, what seems to be the same exact thing, but from two different psukim. Evidently, one of them is misunderstanding the pasuk. The word moikta or the word mizbeach is actually meant for a different drasha. That would be an example. The Gemara says, no, that's not a good example because Hahasam Mithlig Pligi. Because as a matter of fact, there they actually are arguing. They're not actually saying the same Svara. They actually are arguing on the parameters of this din. Namely, the Katani Sefer, because that same Mishnah continues in Zvachim. Ein Ben Giver Rav Gamliel the Giver Rav Yeshua, Ela Hadam Ba Nesachim. The only difference between Rav Gamliel's Shitta and Rav Yeshua's Shitta would be as far as blood or as far as Nesachim. Blood and Nesachim are not supposed to be put on the fire. Blood gets poured on the base of the Mizbeach, or gets sprinkled on the sides of the Mizbeach, and the rest of it is poured on the base. Nesachim are poured into the shisin, are poured into the drainage holes or whatever, or the cups or whatever at the top of the Mizbeach. So therefore, so what are we saying? Rabbi Yeshua is learning from the word al-moikta, anything which is placed on the fire. Therefore, he would hold this din does not apply to Dam and Nesachim. Because Dam and Nesachim were never royal ishim. They were never meant to be placed on the fire in the first place.
So therefore,
according to Rabbi Yeshua, it comes out that if blood of a korban were to become tamei, you wouldn't say that b'dievet, if you put it on the day after you leave it, you would have to take it down. And the same thing with Nesachim. Whereas Yom Gamliel, who learned it from Mizbeach, would say as long as it's just supposed to go on any part of the Mizbeach. Saying they don't come down from the Mizbeach, but Rabbi Yeshua and the Yehudu, and Rabbi Yeshua says you do take them down. So you see, it's not just the difference of what word in the pasuk they gashen from. The difference of what word actually comes to a difference in halacha. So that's not a good example of a case where you have two
that's
people.
That's
why they're using different words. So therefore, now it is true. The fact of the matter is, the halacha has to be like one or the other of them. So you could still argue one or the other of them is making a mistake, misunderstanding the pasuk. But you still can't say that it's an example of what we said, of what we were saying before, that two dayanim have one svara, which is a valid svara. Not that one of them disagrees with the other one's svara. They just disagree on the pasuk. This isn't a good example of that.
One of them is not.
The svara itself is not valid, right?
Okay. One of them is contradictory.
It's contradictory.
But not valid.
Well, that is contradictory.
Well, I mean, look, Eilevela Jibela Kim Chaim, but we mean at, you know, at the level of trying to figure out who is the halacha like. Because halacha can only be like one.
You do put Nesachim on the Eish Tamei Takidal Nesach, and where do you put the Nesachim on top? Because there's a tight there about Psik Reisha below.
If a person is menadev, if a person is menadev, wine by itself, oil by itself, that's a different thing. We're talking about nesachim that come with.
Never mind. Now you remind me what I was thinking.
Okay.
Okay. Which
is about
wine only?
No, he's talking about a case where a person donates, where a person says that I'm going to bring a korban of only wine. And then the din is your mother. We're not talking about that. Okay. Ella omer apapa kedetanya. No, rather apapa says you can say that you can. He was an example from the following brayse. Rabbi Yosi said an example of two psukim that teach us the same conclusion. Right. So let's use the following example. This is also from that same Mishnah in Zvachim. Rabbi Yosi Agzuzimer, mitoch shenem akana geir b'mizbeach yisosh. Given that the prophet says anything that touches the mizbeach will become holy, shenei ani ben roi ben she'en roi. You would think that means whether the thing was originally roi to go on the mizbeach or not. Let's say, for example, now the din. Now we know kolana geir exactly. Let's say, for example, even the animals of Baal Mum. You would think maybe it applies. No. Talmud Loma Kvasim. No, therefore the Pasuk mentions in that connection, it mentions Kvasim, lambs, implying Makvasim Ru'i, and just as lambs are something that are suitable to bring on the Mizbeach, Afkol Ru'i, the same way, this concept of Kol Negev HaMizbeach Yitzash only applies to something that was originally Ru'i to go and then became Pigul or Tame or whatever. Because the word kvasim means this is what you should offer on the mizbeach, kvasim neshana, the lamb. So we see the lambs there are ones that are kosher for a korban. So therefore, it has to mean only something that was originally kosher for a korban, not something that was the shaloi. It means so it's a kol. It means kol anything which was roi lamizbeach and then became posel, as opposed to when it was posel before it even came into the azara. Such as a Baal Mum.
You can't interrupt this because I lose the thought when you interrupt with
Kol Hanegei B'Mizbeach, on the face of it, should mean anything. So even, for example, a Baal Mum, even a wild animal, even whatever. Note, but since the Pasuk mentions Kvasim, that comes to delimit what the Kol Hanegei B'Mizbeach Yishkash means. It means only something which is like Kvasim in the sense that at one time it was suitable to bring into the Mizbeach and it was brought into the Azara, still suitable to be brought on the Mizbeach, and then it became possible after that. It became Pigul or Tomei or what have you.
Is that one of the Limudim Kol
Prat? Well, no, I guess maybe it's a Kol Prat, yeah. This is Rabbi Yosi Agluli saying that. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva Omer Oila. Rabbi Akiva says you don't learn it from the word Kvasim, you learn it from the word Oila in that same passage. Ma oila ru'uya, just like an oila is something which is suitable to bring on a mizbeach, af koroi, the same thing the kolana gave on mizbeach, means only something that's suitable. Therefore, v'tavayu mai kamamatu. Again, what are both Rabbi Yosi Agluli and Rabbi Akiva trying to be mamayit, saying that the pasuk is coming to be mamayit, psuli, they're both coming to be mamayit, psulim, things that are possible that were never suitable as of when they came into the azara, for example, a Baal Mum. And we see ma'amaisi lama kvasim and ma'amaisi lama oila. And we see they're learning it from different psukim, different words in the pasuk. Again, there you have an example. One svara, two different words, where we say if they were judging this in a case, and in the Sanhedrin, we would only count them as one vote. Again, the question is that no, there's an actual difference in halacha between them because ha'amar of Adar Ba'ava, oila sa'if psula ikibinayu. Because Rabbi Adar Ba'ava says the nafkamina between Rabbi Yosi Agluli's understanding and Rabbi Akiva's understanding would be what happens to an oila sa'if, food oila, that became possible. Mandamaisilam kvasim, Rabbi Yosi Agluli, who learned the concept from the word kvasim, he says kvasim ein, aval oila sa'if loy. The point of saying the word kvasim means only animals, which in that sense are similar to kvasim, therefore not an oif. So according to him, if an oilas oif became possible in the azara, you would not, even if you did bring it on from the mizbeach, you would have to take it down. Yes. Or mandamaisi lama oila, whereas Rabbi Akiva, who learned it from oila, would say afilo oilas oif nami. He would say, well, the same din applies to an oilas oif, a possible oilas oif also. Ideally, it shouldn't be brought on the mizbeach, but im ola lo yerid, if you do bring it on the mizbeach, you don't take it off. So still not a good example, because they actually argue on the actual resulting din.
We want two psukim to come
to the exact same conclusion where there's no nafkamina.
Here we go.
Ela omer Ravashi said no. Rather, Ravashi says, I'll give you another example. To the Tanya, we learn in a braisa as follows. Now, we know there's a concept, there's a concept in the Torah called Shote Chut. We've talked about it before briefly. The main place the Gemara talks about it is towards the end of Zvachim. That you're not allowed, once the Beis HaMikdash was built, you're not allowed to bring korbanos any place outside of it. And if you bring a korban outside the Beis HaMikdash, not only is it possible, but you're chayav koris. Chayav koris. So, the Torah tells us in Parashas Achrimos, when it discusses this concept, it says, dom yechoshev lo ishahu dom shofach. So the Torah starts by saying that if a person shechs the korban outside the Azara, it says, dom yechoshev lo ishahu, it will be considered like bloodshed for that person. Dom shofach, he spilled blood, and therefore he's chayav koris. So by saying dom shofach l'rabbis zazorik, that comes to include that not only a person would be chayav kares for shechting a korban outside the Beis Hamikdash, but also for sprinkling the blood outside. Let's say
shofach means
he spilled. But in other words, besides
only shechting.
But it means also that he spilled the blood outside. In other words, he applied the blood to something outside. He made his own mizbeach outside the Beis Hamikdash, for example, and applied the blood to it. So let's say, for example, he took a korban, shechted it in the Azara. We're fine, so far so good. Then he takes the blood out and sprinkles it on some private bomo or whatever. Then he would be chayav kares for that. Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva, oizevach l'rabbis zazorich. Rabbi Akiva said, you learn that from a different pasuk, that the pasuk says, that if he takes the blood outside, that the pasuk a few pasukim later, it says that he brings an oila oizevach or a zevach. He says the word oizevach comes to include somebody who sprinkles the blood.
So therefore, that's
his drasha, that he says that the word oizevach, because otherwise the pasuk didn't have to say oila oizevach, didn't have to say that he brings an oila or a zevach. By saying that, it implies that not only he shechts an animal, but also if he sprinkles the blood. So,
instead of the Torah should have said otherwise?
Instead of the Torah, could have just said that he brings a korban, let's say. Now, what are both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva coming to say that the Torah is including? They're both saying the Torah is including zrika, that a person is chayav kares for zrika outside the azara. And we see ma ma'isu l'midam yechoshev ma ma'isu l'malam ozeva. So you see again the same svara from two different psukim.
To come to
the same conclusion.
It's
the same conclusion that he's chayav kares for zrika. However, didn't Rabbi Bo say that there is actually a nachkamina between them in halacha? What if the person both shechted this korban outside the azara and sprinkled the blood there? The divrei Rabbi Shmuel in chayv alachas, according to Rabbi Shmuel, who's learning it from the word dom shofach, he would say that you only, and Rashi points out, also we're talking about helam echad. If he did, let's say, so he didn't do it b'mezid, he's not chayv kares, but he does it b'shoigig. The question is, how many korbanos chatas does he need to bring for this avera? For this avera of shchut echut. If he did it b'helam echad, he did it all within one period of not knowing that this is awesome. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, he'd only be chayv one chatas. Because he says that since he learns the word zorik from the context where it talks about b'shoichet, it says that the ashayushchat shorik hesev oyez al pesach haramoyed dom yechashav leishahu dom shapach v'nichras. So according to him, it's all one continuation. Shoichet and zorik is all covered by one kari, and therefore only one chata, So we did it b'shoichet. The Divrei Rabbi Akiva Chayiv Shtayim, whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, where you learn it from two different psukim over there, one with two different contexts over there. So then he would say you're chayiv too.
Which word again?
We have, because he learned it from oizevach, which is a few psukim later. Then the pasuk continues that if somebody, yashad yala oila oizevach, somebody who offers it, because there's four basic avoidas with a korban, and any of the four of them that a person does outside the Beis Hamikdash will make them chayiv kares. There's shechting, there's sprinkling the blood, there's carrying it to the mizbeach, there's sprinkling on the mizbeach, and there's offering the pieces of it on the mizbeach. So a few psukim later, it talks about the concept, if you offer the pieces on a bama, then you'd be chayiv kares. And in that connection is where it says the word oizevach, which Rabbi Akiva says you learn from that to zorik. So once again, you have two different contexts. One about shechet, one about zorik, therefore two different kares in, and therefore two different chatais. So you have an actual difference in halacha between them. So it's still no good. The answer is no, because in this case, it still is good after all. Ha itmar Allah, because there was also said on that, Amar Abaya, that Abaya disagrees with that, with what Rabbi Bo says. Ach, the Divrei Rabbi Akiva, nami ein chayv al ach. Even according to Rabbi Akiva, who learns it from two different psukim, two different karesin, he says that nevertheless, you'd only be chayv one chata. The Amakra, because you have a pasuk that says in last week's parsha, Shom Tala Olisecha v'Shom Tase, there in the Beis Hamikdash you should offer your Olis. It's another pasuk, doesn't matter, fine. But wait, it says there you should bring your Olis and there you should do, implying Avina Rachmana L'Kulu Afiyas. By saying the word v'Shom Tase, the Torah is combining together all the different acts that form part of making a korban, of bringing a korban, that all of them, you have a mitzvah to do them only in the Beis Hamikdash, and therefore by saying one term, v'sham tase, it means the Torah is making a hekesh between asiyah and halah and all the other avodim.
You need an extra pasuk for that.
That's fine. You can have an extra pasuk that teaches us that particular detail that you only chayav one. If you only have the psukim in achrei moed, according to Rabbi Akiva, you would be chayiv two chatois. The pasuk in Parshas Re'eh instead teaches that you only chayiv one chatois. But based on that, it comes out still that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, still, when it comes to the question, are you chayiv karis for zrika, they are in fact learning it from two different words. One learns it from oizevach, the other learns it from dom yechoshev. They come out to the same conclusion. Rabbi Akiva needs the pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, Rabbi Shmuel doesn't. Fine, but as far as the actual din, whether you chayiv karis, no, but as far as the question, whether you chayiv karis, not chatas, whether you chayiv karis for zrika, both of them are learning it from the same place. So you see, that would be an example of if that would be an example of the kind of thing we're talking about, where two dayanim come up with the same verse. They both agree chayav karis, but they learn it from different circuits.
Right.
They learn it from Akiva learns it from Oizevach, Rabbi Shmuel learns it from Gam Yechoshev. There is an example where you can have if two dayanim did like that in the Sanhedrin, you would count them as only one vote. But the fact is, the Torah would only have had to write one or the other of those psukim for that drasha. The other one, obviously, is needed for some other drasha, not the one that you, the Dayan, are thinking of, and therefore we can't count you as a separate person.
That's the only case?
That's not the only case, but there's an example. There's an example, and this isn't Din in a Parshas anyway, but it gives us an idea. Now at least we have an idea of what we're dealing with. The Mishnah had said another distinction between dinim mominus and dinim nefashis. We said dinim mominus donin by yom chola. We said dinim mominus, you can do the actual deliberation by day, but the gemar din can be by night, the verdict can be by night. Dinim nefashis, the whole thing has to be by day. So simin mishpat minim maseh. This simin is actually, usually we have a simin in the Gemara is for things that are one after the other. Here it's a simin for three statements that Rav Chiya bar Papa, or Rav Acha bar Papa, it says on the side, says throughout this parak. One here, and the other two on Daf Lamed Vav.
Shall we finish a little bit?
No, if anybody wants to get together for a little bit after Ma'ariv and try to catch up a little bit, I wouldn't object. But anyway, let's go on.
Sure.
Okay, let's go.
We're ready for 6 a.m. tomorrow.
Okay. Menahani Mili, where do we know this from, this idea that Dinim Mominus can be finished off by night? Amr of Chiyah Bapapa, Acha Bapapa, the Amr Krab, Shofter Asam Bacholais, because the Pasuk says they should judge the people at all times. At all times implies by night also. Question is, Yehachi Tchilif Din Nami, in that case, why shouldn't the beginning of the Din also be able to be by night? Why does the Mishnah say the beginning has to be by day? The answer is Kedirabah. That part is like what Rabbah said. The Rabbah Rum, because Rabbah pointed out a contradiction between two psukim. You have the one pasuk in Parshas Yisrael that says they judge the people at all times, implying by day and by night. But you have a different pasuk that says you have a pasuk that says on the day that he bequeaths his property to his children, implying that nachlois, which is a paradigm here for dinim mominus, has to be dafka by day. Okay, so how do you reconcile these two psukim? Is it by day or by night? Yom l'tchilas din means the beginning of the din has to be by day. Laila l'gmar din, and the night time can be for the gmar din.
You don't say just for dinim mominus?
Well, only dinim mominus. Yeah, dinim nefashis is different. Dinim nefashis, the whole thing has to be...
So that includes all the dinim mominus?
Yeah. Masnissin de loikir of meir. Fine. The Mishnah says, though, our Mishnah evidently does not go like Rav Meir. The Tanya, Hoyer Rav Meir. Rav Meir used to say, Ma tam alayma al piyam yiyah kol rivachol noga. What does it mean? The Pasuk says at the end of this week's parasha that in connection with the Eglah Rufa, the Torah says that the Koyanim comes and then steps forward, that the Koyanim al piyam yiyah kol rivachol noga, based on what they say is all cases of argument, which means dinim ominous, and every nega, every case of negoyim, of tzara'as, has to be seen by the koyanim, v'chima inin rivim meitz on negoyim. Why is the Torah juxtaposing, why is it putting together rivim with negoyim? What's the comparison? Ela makish rivim l'negoyim. It means the Torah is making a hekish between rivim and negoyim. The Torah is making a hekish. The Torah is putting them together. Ma negoyim bayoyim, just like negoyim tzara'as, can only be seen by day, and we know that because the pasuk says "Dichtiv v'yoyim heroi tzoy," because the pasuk says on the day that they were seen in him, implying that it has to dafka be by day. Rivim by yoyim. So what the rivim has to be dafka by day, and rivim implies the whole process of dinim ominus, including the gemar din. So our Mishnah says the gemar din can happen at night, but Meir doesn't agree with that. And further, uman negoyim shaloi besumim, just as negoyim tzaraf cannot be seen by a koyin who's blind or even half blind. Dichtiv, because the pasuk says v'chol mare enei ha-koyin, that it has to be visible by the full sight of the koyin. Af rivim,
not one side only.
not if he's blind in one eye, and not even the Mefarshim point out the same way as, for example, you know, we have a concept that if you can have a Kohen Ama'aretz who doesn't know the ins and outs of the dinim of Taras, but he can bring along with him a Talmid Chacham. The Talmid Chacham will do the actual examination, see whether it's supposed to be Tomei or Tahar, and tell the Kohen, say that it's Tomei, and the Kohen says the word Tomei, and then it becomes official, or say Tahar, as the case may be. So you would think maybe the same kind of thing, a blind Kohen, maybe the same thing. You should bring along somebody with sight. No. So therefore, after Rivim, Shalai B'Sumin, therefore the Meir says, by the same logic, Rivim, Dini Momenes, cannot be judged by a Dayan who's blind. And the Hekesh goes the other way around as well. U'makesh Negoyim L'Rivim, we also make the Hekesh the other way around, that we make a Hekesh to compare Negoyim to Rivim. Ma Rivim Shalai B'Kredim, just as Dini Momenes, cannot be judged by relatives, as we learned in the last parak, after Negoyim Shalai B'Kredim. So also Negoyim cannot be seen by a relative. That part is not the halacha, actually. A relative is able to see Negoyim. Yeah.
Why is not the halacha?
So that this is what Rameir holds. We see. We just said that our Mishnah doesn't agree with Rameir. Okay. The question. No. Usually the halacha is not like Rameir. Actually. Usually the halacha is like the Chachamim against Rameir. If you're going to go that hekesh, if you're going to continue with that hekesh, you could argue maybe what it means is just as dinim omenes have to be judged by at least three, maybe negoyim have to be seen by three. Vidinhu, and not only you would make the hekesh, but you could also make kavah choymer. Mamoine b'shloisha, madach to judge his money, you need three gufay lekol shekein, how much more so to judge something on his actual body. No, therefore, Talmud Lomar v'huva al Aaron HaKohen, therefore, no, the Pasuk says by Metzora that he should be brought to Aaron HaKohen, oyal achad v'goymer, or to one of his sons, the Kohen, meaning all you need is one Kohen. Fine. Holomab, so from that you learn, Shaka v'Kohen echad, royas anegoyim. So you see from that even one Kohen is enough to see negoyim. So anyway, that whole bright says, according to the mayor, and therefore the mayor would say the Gmar Din of Dinim Omenes also has to be by day. The halacha is not like him, though. The halacha is like a Chachamim in our Mishnah that it can be finished by now. Okay. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Hahu Samya, there was a blind Dayan, to have a Beshiva Vusid Rabbi Yechanan, who lived in Rabbi Yechanan's neighborhood, to have a Doyen Dina, he used to judge cases of Dini Mominus, Veloy Amalei Rabbi Yechanan Veloy Midi, and Rabbi Yechanan didn't tell him that anything was a matter. So the question is, Hechi Obid Hachi, how could Rabbi Yechanan do that? Why doesn't he tell him? We know Rabbi Yechanan says that the halacha is always like a stam mishnah, utnan, and we have a mishnah in Masechta Nida that says kol kosher lodrum kosher lahoid. It says there anybody who's kosher to judge is also kosher to give eders. The yesh kosher lahoid vein kosher lodrum. There are cases. There's a certain type of person who's kosher to give eders but is not kosher to judge. And Rabbi Yechanan lasu yisuma ba'achas me'eno. And Rabbi Yechanan says that comes to include that. That comes to include that a dayan who's blind in one that a person is not able to judge if he's blind in one eye, which would mean like what Rameir said that we make a hekesh between rivim and negoyim. A kohen who's blind in one eye can't see negoyim, and therefore he can't do rivim either. So that stam mishnah is according to Rameir. So how is Rabbi Yechanan going against it? The answer is Rabbi Yechanan stama achrina ashkach, because Rabbi Yechanan found different stam mishnah that contradicted that, namely our mishnah dini mominus donin b'yom v'goyim b'layla. Namely, our mishnah says that you're able to begin dini mominus by day and finish them by night. So we see our mishnah disagrees with Rameir. Our mishnah, in other words, is saying even though you don't see very much by night, the Rif explains the point of comparison is you don't see as much by night as you do by day, and still you're able to finish Gemar Din. The same way, a blind person is only able to see in one eye, the same way he should be able to judge, even though he can't see as well as a regular person. The question is, my Umid high summer, my high summer. Fine, why is one Stam Mishnah, ours in Sanhedrin, why is it any stronger than the one in Nida? And maybe you should say that Halacha is like the one in Nida, and this guy is puzzled.
Why
is Rabbi they put Stam Mishnah? Put somebody's name on it. Well, no, not that way. Why do you put the Stam Mishnah here above and there? That's maybe a different question also. The answer is, number one, a Stam Mishnah that goes according to the Rabbim is stronger. Our Mishnah goes according to the Chachamim against Rav Meir. That Stam Mishnah in Nida is only according to Rav Meir. Yes, the Stam Mishnah and the Halacha should be like a Stam Mishnah, but our Stam Mishnah, which is according to the Chachamim, is stronger. The Iboyis Eima Mishum de Katani la Gaba Hilchsa de Didina. Or you could say our Mishnah is stronger because the context is talking about the halachas of the Dayanim. In Nida is not really the place where it talks about the dinim of Dayanim. The reason why that Mishnah is in Nida is only because there's a series of Mishnayos over there that you have all A or B, but not all B or A. There's a bunch of examples like that, starting with a din in Hilchos Nida. So, therefore, and then that connection, it brings that in, but it's sort of agav grora. It's like brought in incidentally, as opposed to on Mishnah, which is in Sanhedrin, where the actual dinim of Dayanim belong, and therefore, Rabbi Yechanan holds that's a stronger Stam Mishnah.
The stronger Stam Mishnah
because it's in its place, in the Sechta Sanhedrin, is where you would expect the halachas of Dayanim to be. You wouldn't expect the halachas of Dayanim to be in the Sechta Nida. Yeah, okay, you have a Stam Mishnah there. It's just mentioned incidentally among a bunch of halachas with similar structures.
If you're so therefore, like us, you
that. Yeah, that's all right.
Okay.
All right. So.
Okay,